Guitarathon is the greatest guitar sale on earth, and it's happening now. Get massive savings on a huge selection of electric and acoustic guitars, basses, amps, pedals, and other accessories. Get select Ernie Ball strings, 3 for $10. Save $100 on a Fender Special Edition Strat, or get a Yamaha acoustic for just $199. Plus, get special financing on select major brands. Don't miss these incredible deals. Available online and in-store, now through November 1st. Guitarathon, only at Guitar Center. Find your sound.
You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On Pacers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where you can get a daily dose of great information about your favorite NFL and NBA team, including the Pacers, right here. My name is Tom Lewis of IndyCornrows.com, and we're coming to you following the Pacers' exciting season-opening win in overtime over the Dallas Mavericks, 130-121. It was fast and furious and frustrating, and starred none other than the 20-year-old Miles Turner. Now, yesterday, I talked about managing expectations about the 20-year-old big man for the Pacers. And, you know, feel free to throw those managed expectations out the window. I was looking at hoping that Turner could average 15 points and 8 rebounds per game, which would put him in some pretty elite company among 20-year-olds if he could average that for the season. That still seems realistic. But on opening night, he doubled those numbers. 30 points, 16 rebounds, and added 4 blocks as he was a stellar defender around the rim and really forced the Mavs to abandon playing Andrew Bogut as they went small, in large part because J.J. Barea and Deron Williams were having their way out front against the guards. So the Mavs tried to spread things out, try to bring Turner away from the rim as much as possible, and slow things down, shoot a lot of threes. You know that Rick Carlisle is going to have some great game planning to try and get past the Pacers, and he brought everything he had tonight. And, of course, you know, it's not real fair when you get to play the Mavs with Deron Williams and Dirk Nowitzki and even Bogut in their first regular season game because they're healthy, they're ready to play, 30-40 games down the road, they may not be in as good a shape, but they brought it tonight at the Fieldhouse, never buckled, and put the Pacers into overtime and forced Miles Turner to make some big plays along with Paul George to get them over the hump and win that overtime game. Now, the Pacers were 1-7 last season in overtime. Of course, they also had several frustrating close losses down the stretch of games, but it looked like we were headed that way again in the final minutes when they were unable to close out the lead. Jeff Teague had 2 free throws and clanked the first one, made the third to give the Pacers a 3-point lead towards the end of regulation. But the Mavs threw some great ball movement, and with Dirk open for a brief second, he drew 2 Pacers, which left Harrison Barnes wide open for a 3-pointer. Now, if you stop it right there, would you rather have Dirk shooting that 3 or Harrison Barnes? I'll take Harrison Barnes shooting it 10 out of 10 times. But he came through in the clutch and drained it, sent the game to overtime after Pacers did get a decent shot off, which again last year sometimes they didn't even get a shot off. But they had 2 seconds left. Miles Turner had a contested 3 at the top of the key that bounced and went out. But that's just set up more heroics for overtime. So a quality win for the Pacers, along with plenty of things that they can work on and grow. But what you're getting here is a W over a solid Western Conference team. And now when you zoom out a little bit from opening night and all the excitement This is the first of 9 games that the Pacers have to begin the season that are, you know, not every game, I'm not saying easy, but they're, you know, definitely winnable games. Looking at the schedule, considering them going 7-2, isn't asking too much out of those 9 games. And it's important to get off to that good start, just because the games after those first 9 for the next 3 weeks are real difficult and include some heavyweights from the Western Conference along with the Cavs. So the wins will be harder to come by. And if they can get some momentum and get rolling a little bit early here in the first few games, then they'll be in far better shape to take on those top teams. And really, if they can get the 1-2 punch from Paul George and Miles Turner that they got tonight, they're going to be able to hang with anybody. So it was a lot of interesting dynamics at play. Monte Ellis and Jeff Teague were up and down, but really the starting unit as a whole, you know, shared the wealth. They all scored in double figures. Of course, Miles Turner with 30 led the way, but Paul George also had 25 with a strong finish. Really, kind of played a role in the background, facilitating much of the game. He only took 14 shots, took open threes when he had them, but you know, didn't force anything. And when the Pacers were kind of struggling to get over the hump in overtime, and Monte and Jeff Teague were really struggling, you know, setting up the offense, generating plays, Paul George finally took the ball and decided to find a way to make plays, and he did that. He got to the bucket one time with a great baseline move, a real strong finish through traffic, also hit a couple threes, but the dagger shot really was when he drove baseline again, was bottled up, fired it out to Miles Turner, who hit the three-pointer and put the Pacers up for good. Now, of course, Turner comes back down, gets a tie-up to force a jump ball with J.J. Barea, which, of course, he won. But the ball almost went out of bounds. Pacers had to scramble around to save it. Mavs were pressuring, and before you knew it, Turner was free, going to the rim for a monster tomahawk dunk. And if you get on Pacers.com, I'm sure you can hear Mark Boyle's call. I heard the replay a couple times, and he just says, wham! And you can hear the vibration of the audio as he screamed wham, and that was a perfect description of that game clincher right there. So, again, Pacers finish up 130-121 win. Some of the numbers are insane, considering the first game in this new style of play. Pacers are playing, and really, it's going to take some time to adjust to this type of play. There's a lot of ebb and flow in a game like this when shots are going up quicker. You know, there's a lot of 6, 8, 10-point runs back and forth. It seems like you're in control for a little bit, and then all of a sudden the game's tight again. I know in the first half in particular, the Pacers appeared to be dominating the action. They led the whole way. And, you know, really looked good. They started out on fire, jumped out to a quick 6-0 lead, and seemed to continue to build on that momentum throughout the first quarter, and had the Mavs chasing them. But then, you know, you get down to halftime, and suddenly, the game is still only a 7-point game. So, knowing the Pacers pass, you know, whenever it seems like they're playing well, but they're not putting away teams, there's always some kind of trouble lurking around the corner. And the Mavs just kept grinding away. Again, they went with a smaller lineup, and one of the glaring issues the Pacers had was defending the pick and roll, and with J.J. Barea and Darren Williams. Williams looked like he thought it was, 2011. He was draining shots from outside and getting in the rim. Barea was fantastic getting into the lane. So those two guys really led the way for the Mavs. Bray had 22 points off the bench, and Williams had 25. And they really focused on kind of, you know, the new offensive approach, analytic-based offensive approach of, you know, shots at the rim or three-pointers. They had 104 field goal attempts. 83 of those shots were either at the rim or from three, and they shot 48 three-pointers. Just insane. So that was how they overcame the fact that the Pacers' fouling wasn't a lethal problem as it had been sometimes during the preseason. It wasn't great. They did have 23 fouls, but they only gave up 18 free throws, and the Mavs made 13. So the Pacers actually doubled their makes, scoring 26 out of 34 free throws. So that wasn't an issue. Turnovers weren't an issue. Both teams were about even. Pacers had 16, Dallas 15. The Pacers gave up one more point on their turnovers than the Mavs, so that was relatively even. So rebounding, the other area where the Pacers have to do well if they're not going to be a perimeter-oriented three-point shooting team. They did win that battle as well, although again, it was close. Pacers were 52-49, so really the Mavs overcame all those deficits by making their extra threes. So it was unbelievable how they just kept launching them up. I mean, they shot 37% from three, but with 48 trays for a game, which I believe, I heard that was maybe the second most threes in a game. It has to be among the top efforts in the league. So those numbers are just, you know, nutty to look at. As for the Pacers, the bench didn't really provide the big boost that they were hoping. I know before the game, Nate McMillan talked as though Glenn Robinson III would be the reserve wing player. And even though C.J. Miles was available, the idea was that those minutes were going to go to Robinson. Well, as it turned out, after kind of a lackluster first half showing, C.J. got on the floor and was able to get in the mix. And then both players played in the second half, but it appeared that McMillan was more comfortable going with Miles, and he did have a stretch where he knocked down two corner threes, and he ended up scoring 8 points, gave the team a good little boost. So, and then towards the end of the game, when Thaddeus Young fouled out, he also played CJ, which moved Paul George more to the power forward, basically. PG played that stretch four a few different times during the game, and it worked out well having those two in there. There were some lineups there. There was one stretch early in the fourth quarter where the Mavs made a big run, and Pacers had, I think, you know, Rodney Stuckey and LaVoy Allen. They didn't really have a good playmaker on the court, and someone they could rely on inside or out, and McMillan quickly went back to the starting lineup, but, you know, the damage was done, so that's one of those situations where the team's figuring out who can do what and when they can play and who they can play with to help the team sustain a lead as they had. So, I mean, really, the Pacers led most of the game. There were just brief moments when the Mavs were ahead, but they could never shake them. And then until they finally got late in the game and into overtime. So talking with Jeff Teague after the game, he was his normal, you know, subdued self, but he was really happy with the team getting a win. And he definitely didn't have the best debut if you're looking for any issues with opening night. And his play in the second half in particular was not great. And he struggled getting Pacers in the offense at time. He missed a lot of shots. He got to the rim and missed some shots. Now, in the first half, he did a great job. He really attacks the lane with a purpose and was able to get fouled and get to the line. And that was big, especially as they were continuing to try and build on that lead early. Yeah, he did get to the line 13 times in the game. And, you know, he scored, you know, if you're just looking at the numbers and not watching the game, you probably think he, you know, was pretty solid with 20 points. He had 8 assists. But he did have 3 turnovers. He did, down the stretch, just didn't look real sure of himself and what he and or his teammates were doing, and often gave up the ball and let Monte initiate the offense. And then he kind of went over in the corner where George Hill used to find himself all the time. So there were some G. Hill-type moments there down the stretch with Teague. And then Monte as well kind of struggled trying to generate some offense. And again, eventually Paul George said, give me the ball. I'm going to make something happen. And he did, which he should. He's the best player on the court. And he's a guy that has to do that. And even though it seemed like he was kind of having a quiet game, his influence on the win was big. And that should help give him a boost here as far as being that team leader and that guy who can help carry the team to wins. It also helps to look beside him there in the locker room and on the court and see Miles Turner and know that he has a budding superstar playing alongside him and plenty of help when the team needs it. Turner was fantastic. His ability to get shots up quick and take big shots, several possessions when the game is, you know, 1-2 point lead or tie game, he's not hesitating at all. He's taking a shot. This is a guy. It was really interesting seeing him after the game in the locker room. He's a guy who is beyond poised, especially with the media. He doesn't always offer a lot because he's so sharp. He can maneuver through any questioning and be pretty direct and sharp with his comments. But he did admit, you know, at one point he almost kind of talking about, you know, his excitement with the effort. He almost, you could tell he was about to say something like, this is crazy, I can't believe it. Kind of caught himself, but did admit that he was just really a big ball of emotion right there after the game because of having such a big impact on the game and coming through with that big shot at the end. He said he had no hesitation, you know, when he's open like that, he's going to shoot it. And even all night, you know, there were times, one time he was wide open. Pass wasn't perfect. He kind of bobbled it, but he got it up so quick, defense couldn't react, and, you know, and he drained it. When I was talking about those expectations about him, you know, I mentioned that there's going to be nights when he has that shot going and he's going to be unstoppable. And lo and behold, night one. So maybe there's going to be more nights like that than we think, and I can only hope. But he said one thing that as far as getting that shot up quick and always being ready to shoot when he gets the ball is the fact that Nate McMillan is preaching this faster pace, and if you're open, shoot it. If you're open and you don't shoot it, it's almost a negative. And so he's kind of been prepared now to take those shots that are within his range, which, as we know now, after tonight, can definitely extend out to the three-point line, but those 15 to 18 footers are really his wheelhouse and where he can, you know, is going to have to, or he's going to be able to force defenses to come out and check him and then open things up around the rim for cutters or for himself to get to the rim. He also was a great defender protecting the rim. He had 4 blocks, and again, with Mavs tried to go small to kind of minimize his impact around the rim. There was time when he was out guarding Harrison Barnes on the perimeter. Barnes burst past him trying to get to the rim, and he was right on his tail and was able to swat the shot at the rim to, you know, deny that effort from Barnes and kind of kill his will for trying to do that type of thing again. So overall, just again, this was the Miles Turner game, the hello world. I'm ready to jump up and be a big-time player in this league game for Turner in game one, and something that Pacers fans got to be excited about as a perfect way to start the season. Again, beating the Mavs, a good Western Conference team, is a perfect way to start the season. And now they go on the road for two games. On Friday, they are at Brooklyn to play the Nets. And then on Saturday, in Chicago to play the Bulls. And those are two games, again, that they should be able to put forth a winning effort in. Chicago's going to be a challenge, of course, always is up there. And they have their new-look squad, and who the Pacers have already faced twice in preseason, so there'll be some familiarity. But taking care of business, not getting happy with this win, and then stumbling in Brooklyn is going to be key as the team tries to display some mental toughness. And that goes back to all of the discussion of being accountable to each other and doing the right things and playing winning basketball. So starting off on the road with a W to match the big home win will be surely a big goal for the Pacers on Friday. So again, plenty of work to do, which is a great thing to pull out of a win, because all of the issues are masked a little bit by the W and the good things that happen. But as Nate McMillan mentioned, there's plenty that they have to work on and will continue to work on, and areas they need to improve. And I think getting those guards up and running and functioning a little better is going to be critical. But knowing you have those two key players in Paul George and Miles Turner to make big plays down the stretch and win a game that, at least last season, was a difficult game to win, kind of a late collapse into overtime where emotions can bring a team down. Pacers kept grinding, made plays, and leaned on their horses in Paul George and Miles Turner to get it done, and they came through. So that wraps up our thoughts on the opening night W. Thanks for listening to the show today. Love to hear your thoughts on the game and what issues you think the Pacers really need to address, and what excitement you felt, and what you thought of Miles Turner big night at the Fieldhouse. You can reach me via email at indycornrows@gmail.com or on Twitter at indycornrows. And don't forget, you can find the podcast on audioboom.com. Also, subscribe to the pod on iTunes with all the prior episodes also available via both outlets. So check them out. Again, thanks for listening, and that's a wrap for today. You've been listening to Locked On Pacers on the Locked On Podcast Network. You got it.